Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports. And today we got it divided up beautifully for you. We haven't talked a whole lot about Justify, the Triple Crown winning horse, 13th in the history of the sport. It's so unique. It's so rare. Kind of wanted the dust to settle a little bit. That's how you stay away from the hyperbole. That's how you stay away from being a prisoner in the moment. Let it sink in for a couple of days. We are going to talk about this horse's epic accomplishment over the weekend. Again, 13. He's number 13 to win the Triple Crown. The second since American Pharoah did it in 2015. I just got to point this out. Today on the Kickin' Country Pie Auction, which is actually going on right now, we had the Drive Time Sports Justify Pie. It went for $700 to Dr. Doug Larson at Pine Top Medical. Had a bunch of other swag to go with it, but it was a Justify Pie. Very, very cool indeed. We are going to talk some horse racing on the show. Great friend of mine, Steve Bordstein, who is the host of First Sports and also the Fast Track. I'm going to get his opinion on where Justify now sits historically. Is he top five? I think he's top five all time. I really do. When you dissect it and you look into what this horse actually accomplished, I think he's top five all time. I have no problem putting him in that field. We'll talk to Steve Bordstein about that and the controversy of a second Bob Baffert horse running and potentially blocking. Is it fair? Is it wrong? We'll talk all about that a little bit later on in the show. Also, on the local sports front today, we are going to be joined by Emory soccer coach Troy Winter. We had three individuals for Emory High School named to the all-state squads. It was such a fantastic year for this team. We had four. But it was a fantastic year for the soccer team. They claimed the Region 15 championship. The season, unfortunately, came to an end early. Opening round of the state tournament, they fell victim to the upset bug in a 1-0 loss to Union. But we are going to talk to Coach Troy Winter about those individuals that were recognized with all-state selections. That'll be a little bit later on in the show. And, of course, we have the local sports recap coming your way in just a moment. Let's take a look at the national sports news. And the NCAA is changing a rule that will allow schools to block student athletes from transferring to different programs. This was first reported on NCAA.org. Michelle Brutlag-Hosick, the Division I Council, approved a new notification of a transfer rule. It requires schools to enter a student who wishes to transfer into the national transfer database. At that point, coaches from other schools are free to contact that student. Now, per the report, starting with the upcoming 2018-2019 academic year, the council also ruled that athletes can play in up to 4 games each season without losing a season of competition. This is huge here. Under the old transfer model, student athletes had to receive permission from their current school to contact different universities before they were allowed to receive a scholarship on a transfer. Okay, and then also, I think for most people, when you take a look at what actually constitutes a year, it was like 25% of the snaps in football. You couldn't play 25% of the snaps in football, and then that would actually count as a year if you did. Now it's 4 games, which I think is it gives a little bit more clarity. We knew there would be some massive changes coming to the NCAA, but this, I like it. I got to be honest. Most of the time, I'm on the side of the NCAA. I know that there are certain things that the NCAA does that a lot of people have an issue with. I like this a lot. I think they're definitely trying to make strides in making it more friendly for the college athletes. I think this is definitely a big step in that direction. The big news that broke today on ESPN, 2026 World Cup is coming to the United States, It will also come to Mexico and Canada. The joint bid between the three countries actually wins the vote. So the U.S. may not be participating in the World Cup, but this is an historic victory. The globe's biggest sporting event is returning to the U.S. It's a long anticipated deal. The vote went through today. The joint bid of the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, they defeated Morocco, its only challenger, as 200 national soccer federations cast their ballot to cap the FIFA annual Congress. The three-nation bid captured 134 votes. Morocco earned 65 from the panel, and only Iran choosing neither option. Cuba, Slovenia, Spain, whose delegation was in Russia, also abstained. So all in all, big, big win, I think, for the United States, Mexico, and Canada. The tournament will feature an expanded field of 48 teams. Right now, we're only sitting at 32, and it will mark the first time in FIFA history that a three-nation bid has been awarded for the event. Pretty neat deal. If you're into soccer, even if you're not into soccer, it's historical that we're going to have the World Cup returning to the United States of America in some capacity. Fantastic news. Let's take a look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard and what's happening around. We had plenty of day baseball. The Atlanta Braves get the win over the New York Mets 2-0. I was asked this question today. The Mets can trade Jacob deGrom, right? The deGrominator should be on his way out. You can put a fork in New York. DeGrom gets the loss. I think that's going to be the biggest name that we see moved at the trade deadline, and I think it's going to happen relatively soon. I'm going to say the Yankees or the Dodgers. That's where I think DeGrom goes. This game earlier today, the Braves 2, the Mets nothing. Atlanta improves to 39-28. Ozzie Albies, who's been so great for the Braves, hit a grand slam last night, finished 1-for-4. The two RBIs came from Freddie Freeman in this game. He knocked a two-run shot out. So definitely a solid performance once again by the Atlanta Braves. They topped the New York Mets earlier today by a final score of 2-0. We'll take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. We have a lot of great action, actually, this week. I'm most interested in the Cubbies and the Brewers series. But still to come, 5 o'clock hour tonight, we get the Nationals at the Yankees. The Rockies will travel to meet Philadelphia. Detroit will play host to Minnesota. We get San Francisco at Miami. 6:10 tonight, Cleveland at the White Sox. The Royals will play host to the Reds. We get the Padres on the road to meet the Cardinals. 8:05 tonight, Houston and Oakland, and we'll get game two between the Rangers and the Dodgers. Last night, the Dodgers just blast the Rangers in that interleague matchup. That's a quick look around the national sports scene. Again, coming up next, we're going to talk to Emory High School soccer coach Troy Winter, and also we'll catch up with Steve Bortstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico to talk some Triple Crown. Justify. He's now historic. More coming up on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. Coming up on Saturday, June 29th, it'll be the 9th annual Lunatic Triathlon right here in Price. The event makes its return due to popular demand. It seems to get bigger and bigger every year. And yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we were joined by Scott Merrill, event organizer, who talked about the return of the event.
This will be our 9th year putting on the Lunatic Triathlon. In addition to that, we also have a 5K for the people that don't want to bike and swim. We have a duathlon for the people that don't want to swim. And then we have different classes of triathlons, too. We've got one that's only a 1.5-mile run and 6-mile bike called the Mini Sprint. We have an extreme course that swims with the waves on. They bike up Woodhill to Luke's Trail, bike Luke Trail, and come back down. We've got a lot of different events for people of different interests. So really, there should be something for everyone.
This particular triathlon takes place at night, which makes it very unique in its own regard. The swimming portion will actually take place in a closed pool. Merrill continued by talking about the uniqueness of the Lunatic Triathlon.
You know what? I feel like our local athletes need something like this so they're not having to go up to a race up Salt Lake. And then because most of those are in the morning, you know, so they're leaving here either at 3 a.m. to get up there for race time, or they're going up and spending the night and spending money on hotel rooms, on food, all the travel, participate. Not to mention a lot of triathlons out there anymore are $75 to $100.
Yeah.
Ours here is only $40.
Registration is now open for the event, and you can find out more by visiting lunatictriathlon.com. There will also be another Lunatic Triathlon in August. This one will take place in Helper. If you combine this event with the San Rafael Classic, which will take place in July, there are three triathlons in the local area in 3 months. We move over to high school baseball, and coming up this Saturday, the 3A All-Star Baseball game will take place in Spanish Fork at Swenson Park beginning at 11 a.m. Now, the teams have been divided into two sides. The home squad will be led by Carbon High School baseball manager Jeff Cincinnatus. The visiting team will be managed by Grantsville's Aaron Perkins. Each team will be made up of 18 outgoing seniors. The state champion Grantsville Cowboys will have the most participating players with four. Carbon, Grand, South Sevier, Judge, and Juab will all have three representatives. As far as Carbon High School goes this year, Cody Lowe, Zach Bradley, and Nate Olson will represent Carbon High School. And for Emory on the same squad, it'll be Easton Gordon and Colton Wilson. Every school in the 3A classification will have at least one representative. The only school that will not will be Richfield, who did not have a single senior on this year's team. We move over to the national sports scene, and the Utah Jazz have released their complete 2018 Summer League schedule. The Jazz will once again play host to the Utah Summer League on July 2nd, 3rd, and 5th in downtown Salt Lake City at Vivint Smart Home Arena. The team will then head to Las Vegas for the MGM Resorts NBA Summer League 2018, which will be a 12-day, 82-game event featuring every team in the NBA. You can also get the complete schedule for the Utah Jazz Summer League by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Today, we'll be kicking country's annual pie auction, the annual event that raises money in the fight against cancer that stays all local. The pie auction will begin at 9 a.m. on KARB Kicking Country 98.3 and 106.7 FM, and it will continue throughout the afternoon. Make sure you call, bid early, and bid often. And we end by taking a look at what's in store today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports. We'll be joined by Steve Bordstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico, and we'll recap the historic run for Justify and Mike Smith as they became legends in the sport of horse racing by completing the Triple Crown this past Saturday. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Today on the Coach's Corner here on Drive Time Sports, we're going to talk soccer. Now, I know the spring sports season for high school is complete, but the individual accolades just keep adding up for both the Emory and Carbon High soccer squads, and we're going to focus on Emory High today. Joining us over the phone right now, we have Coach Troy Winter. Coach, it's always fun to get you on the show and talk some Emory High School soccer. Thank you again for the time.
Thank you, too, Jordan. Really appreciate it.
Definitely, Coach. Let's dive right into it. First off, two first-team All-State selections on this year's squad, and we'll start by talking about Taven Cook, who's been a three-year starter for Emory. Intricate part to your team's success throughout the year. Well-deserved first-team All-State selection. I was really happy to see Taven's name on there. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. He has been outstanding all year long, and not to mention, for the last 2 years as well, too. And he's a player that is probably a five-year player. He's only been playing soccer for about 5 years, and he stepped into that goalie role and has been really good for us. Really, really good.
You and I have had conversations about Taven in the past, Coach. How much of that, especially with him only playing soccer for 5 years, one of the things you can't coach is instinct. And so how much of that plays into the success that he's had on the soccer field?
It plays a lot. As far as he's got quick hands, he's got, a little bit of a basketball background, a little bit of a baseball background, playing that in youth sports and stuff. And that's played a very big role. But just his all-around athletic ability and being very coachable, willing to take on a key role or an important role, and just being really coachable, to be honest with you, has been his strong point.
You look at what he was able to accomplish, 8 shutouts throughout the year, and he allowed just 8 goals in 10 region games. That's the stat that's mind-boggling, because you guys played in such a competitive region, Coach, and he only gave up 8 goals in 10 games.
Absolutely. 8 goals in 10 games, and that's huge as well, too. One of the other stats that, it kind of goes unrecognized that I want to bring up is, we had 5 PKs on the season, which were, 5 penalty kicks against us, and he actually saved 3 of the 5. Very key games that those were in, and usually a PK is a given, and he shut him down. So it was way awesome.
We talk about another kid that made first-team All-State, Gage Mangum. And the reason why I'm really excited for Gage to get some recognition is because typically, Coach, when you read a box score in soccer, you look at who scored goals and you look at what the goalie did. Defenders sometimes, they're not box score warriors. You really have to watch the game and pay attention to what these guys are doing to get a feel for it. So for him, and we talk about the defense with Taven and everything, for Gage to get this kind of recognition, it's good because I've always felt that defenders never really get their due.
Absolutely. You know, he came in. He's from out of the area. You know, originally his soccer history. He's got family ties here. He come into our program and is extremely coachable. Very willing to do whatever is necessary. You know, for the team, he is very team orientated, and which is really great. He's multifacetable, which means I could have plugged him in any position, and he would have done well for us. And where we needed him was on the defensive side. And you know, when he came out, he performed. He was, you know, in the center there, would win balls out of the air. Just done an amazing job for us, and I've never one time ever complained. You know, so that's even better.
Is it fair to say, if we're comparing football to soccer, that a defender is almost like the left tackle in football? You're only hearing his name if he's doing something wrong. And so if you're never hearing this kid's name, that means he's doing a lot right. Is that a fair comparison?
Absolutely. You know, you don't hear his name, so you don't hear see the mistakes or, you know, anything like that. And, you know, I mean, like I said, he's just, you know, quality on and off the field, for sure.
So those were the two kids that received first All-State first-team selections. Let's talk about honorable mentions, two seniors here, and we'll talk about Parker Sermon. You and I had a lot of conversations about Parker throughout the year. He was very, very good, led the team, I believe, in goals, if I'm not mistaken, throughout the year at the forward spot. I kind of felt that Parker deserved more than an honorable mention, but yet again, he is getting some recognition for his performance.
You know, I feel the same way. You know, Parker done a lot of work for us, you know, at that forward spot. And you know, mid-season, we actually done a little bit of a transition. He moved back to the midfield area and stuff. And, again, you know, he's been a two-year starter. And an honorable mention, you know, is a great thing. You know, I'm not taking anything away with that. But, you know, I would have liked to see a little bit more recognition, you know, for the work that he has done as well, too. So, but that's great for him as well, too. So.
And I believe, Coach, it was 10 goals this season. Is that what he scored, I believe?
13.
13 goals. Most on the team, correct?
Yep, correct. That is correct. He was our leading scorer on the team.
I don't think too often you're going to find the leading scorer of a region champion left off the first or second team. That just doesn't happen.
You know, and that's exactly how we felt, you know, as well, too. Yeah, he's scored a lot of goals and, you know, done a lot of productive stuff for us. You know, so and I say that, so that kind of goes into show, you know, maybe there was, you know, some other players and how tight and how tough, you know, our region is. You know, I mean, we got some good soccer players in this region. The people who got mentioned before him, you know, obviously got those other nominations and stuff. You know, I mean, it was pretty tight, you know. So they must have been doing a really good job in comparison, you know. But, you know, Parker, I mean, you know, top-notch all the way, all the time, you know, so.
Tanyan Allred also gets an honorable mention. It's his second in 2 years, so he misses out on the first or second team, but he does get an honorable mention. Played midfielder for you guys, correct, throughout the year. Was second on the team in goals, I believe.
He did, yep, and he was, and you know, that's another one that I would have liked to see get a little bit more recognition. Another one of them that you don't see his name a lot, because of some of the things and the roles that he does do, you know, as far as even scoring. But he was a hustler. You know, he worked hard, you know, all season long. His speed and his willingness to just go in, you know, after it. His ability from his junior to senior year, to be honest with you, was amazing. His increase, his speed, his ball control, and just his overall physical on the soccer team, you know, was a step up. So I would have, you know, he's one that I would have liked to see, you know, at least a second team or even a first team, because I really felt like he deserved it. You know, he was a mainstay, you know, all season long.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer team. Coach, we talk about these four kids. Three of them are seniors, which means there's some big shoes to fill. And this program continues to get better and better. And I believe the individual accolades for this team itself, we're going to continue to see more and more of this. But this is a pretty special group that we're talking about.
Absolutely. This is, you know, these kids have been here, you know, through the season, you know, through our club program, have been playing soccer, you know, with us for quite a few years. You know, and it goes to show, you know, their athletic ability, you know, their you know, individual, you know, work ethic and the things that they put in on an individual basis as well, too, you know, with camps and, you know, clubs and doing the things that they do. So, you know, my hat's off to them. I mean, they've done a great job, so.
I don't know how much of this goes into the selection, but Coach, I've always felt if we're talking college, if we're talking professional or high school, to be first team All-State, second team All-State, or even earn an honorable mention, it goes beyond what you're accomplishing on the field. I mean, even off the field, you've got to be a leader. You've got to be a captain. And does that kind of signify what these kids did away from the field, in preparation for games and at practice?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, these guys, and that's something that I really have prided myself in is the fact that, you know, all of my players, but these guys, you know, specifically as well, too, are really good athletes. They're called student athletes for a reason. They're good athletes, but they're also good students. They're all also productive members of society, you know, and that says a lot for them. You know, they really do, you know, step it up as far as, you know, leadership. They step it up as far as, you know, things in the community and being involved in the community, being involved with things, you know, with soccer, with our youth programs. Nothing's better for, you know, a younger rec player to be able to look up to these high school soccer players. I mean, because they, in a small sense, are the heroes to them. And, you know, these boys have done a great job at that, you know, with the camps that we've held, being involved with our rec stuff. It's been, you know, fun working with them.
Coach, do you get to deliver the news to the kids that they've made All-State?
I did actually this time. I was kind of on top of it, and it was a very proud moment. Neither one of them knew, you know, at the time that they had been, you know, nominated, let alone, you know, had received, you know, that, you know, recognition. And so I was able to, and it's a bittersweet moment, to be honest with you, because, you know, we put a lot of work in, a lot of time in, you know, specifically with Taven. I mean, somebody that I put a lot of hours in with, and, you know, his ability, you know, has been, like I say, I think he could play at the next level, you know, given the opportunity. He really is a quality goalie, you know, and he's got the ability to do the next level, you know, if that's something that he wanted to do.
Which is amazing because, again, you pointed out earlier, he's only played soccer for 5 years.
Correct. And that's what's cool about him, and, you know, the things that he's done, and, you know, and his work ethic. You know, he's really striving hard, and, you know, has done a good job, you know, throughout specifically for the last 3 years, but more so for the last 5 years. I mean, he really, like you said, he took the bull by the horn and was willing to, you know, goalie's not a glamorous position. If you're losing and getting scored on, or you get a goal scored on you, and he's willing to take that on and shut people down. So
I know soccer is a team sport, even though we're talking about individual accolades, Coach. These kids, it helps to have a competent group beside you. And you and I have talked all year long about how this team, how they perform throughout the year and winning a region championship. That helps for individual recognition when you're on a winning team.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it goes a long ways. You know, you get a region championship, it builds a little bit of momentum, builds a little bit of excitement. The younger kids that were, you know, playing on the program and playing with us and stuff, you know, it gets them excited for next year, you know, and moving forward, you know. I mean, and that helps that individual recognition. You know, then, you win a region championship, and then people start to take a look and say, okay, you know, this program, you know, maybe is on, you know, the up-and-coming stage, and maybe there are some quality soccer players here. Well, now they can see that, you know, because we were a region champion this last year. And they don't give those away. You know, we had to be consistent, and we had to work hard throughout the season to, you know, to receive that, you know, receive that award as well, too.
Coach, it's always fun to get you on. Before I let you go, what we can talk about off season for this team. Anything in the works now that we've hit the summer months and we're in June?
You know, we're actually moving forward. We've got some tournaments that we're going to be hitting through the summer. We've hit a couple already. Little 3v3 tournaments that we've done, you know, over the past month here, and we actually have got a tournament upcoming this next weekend and stuff, and the summer games in Cedar City, and then we'll hit two or three more tournaments, you know, just for those that you know, have a desire to keep playing soccer, and that's what's continued to build our program. You know, those kids that are, you know, coming out and playing with that, and, you know, so there is some training. My philosophy is we don't ever stop playing soccer. So we're always working, whether it be big or small. So
Well, Coach, again, a pleasure to get you on. Congratulations on coaching just a great group of kids and the success that you guys have had. It's awesome to see some individual accolades, and I appreciate you again taking out the time for us.
Yes, you betcha. No worries. I appreciate it as well, too, and thanks. You have a great day.
Again, that's Coach Troy Winter of the Emory High School soccer squad taking out the time to join us and talk about the All-State selections for his squad. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to move over to the national sports scene. We're going to talk Justify and his Triple Crown accomplishment over the weekend. Steve Bortstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico will join us when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. It's a Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
They're running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're going to move over and talk horse racing. And just to throw this out there, earlier today on Kickin' Country, we had the Justify Triple Crown Pie on the annual pie auction that went for $700. You know, Justify is just a hot horse at the moment. What can I say? Joining us right now to talk a little bit about that and more, we have Steve Bortstein of Fox Sports 1340 in New Mexico. Steve, we've had you on over the last month talking horse racing, month and a half. And from the very beginning, you told me that this Justify horse is something special. You were rooting for him to win the Triple Crown from the get-go. And I mention that to my listeners because you're the kind of horse racing expert. First off, you host the Fast Track, which is nationally syndicated. You don't want a Triple Crown winner for the sake of a Triple Crown winner. You want one that is deserving. And from the get-go, you felt that Justify fit that mold.
And I believe that even more so now with the Belmont having been run. And I feel that history will show that Justify is probably going to go down in history as one of the five or six greatest Triple Crown winners that we've ever seen. And that is by no means a disrespect to American Pharoah, who won the Triple Crown 3 years ago. But American Pharoah is a nice racehorse. Justify is a better racehorse and will go down in history, I believe, is a better racehorse.
When you look at the journey of Justify to get to the Triple Crown, he had terrible weather at the Kentucky Derby, he had terrible weather at the Preakness, and then he wins the Belmont wire-to-wire fashion. I mean, how impressive is it in your mind when you take a look at the other 12 Triple Crown winners in the route that they had to go? I mean, where does it rank in the realm of difficultness?
He's the second undefeated Triple Crown winner, the first being Seattle Slough in 1977. But every other Triple Crown winner before Justify had one thing in common. They all raced as two-year-olds. So let's take that out of the equation now for Justify, who didn't actually make his career debut until mid-February of his three-year-old campaign. So he did all of this. You mentioned the off-track at Churchill, the off-track at Pimlico, the wire-to-wire victory in the Belmont. Now let's throw into that the three races he had prior to that. He broke his maiden in mid-February, won an allowance race in March, won the Santa Anita Derby in April. He did all of this in the scope of 112 days, which means not only did he squeeze in six races into an average of about every 18 days, he did all of this having no two-year-old foundation whatsoever. He broke the curse in winning the Derby that no horse had broken in 130 years and having no races as a two-year-old. So he does all of that while also remaining undefeated and winning on three separate tracks, three types of different racetracks, a sloppy track, an even sloppier track at Pimlico with the fog and everything else, and then winning the Test of Champions in the Belmont Stakes. So that's what separates him. That's the difference between his journey and every other Triple Crown winner. And I'm including Secretariat in that. I'm including Affirmed in that. All those horses raced it too. This one didn't, so it makes the achievement that much more remarkable.
Does that mean that this is a sign of things to come? I mean, that may be a dumb question because it's never happened, but do you see it as a sign of things to come for stellar and elite horses, or at least those that have the pedigree of a stellar and elite horse to not run as a two-year-old?
I don't know if it's a sign of things to come. I don't know if it shouldn't be, though. We do put too much of an emphasis, I think, in horse racing on two-year-old races. We put too much of an emphasis because there's so much money there. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile is worth $2 million. There's million-dollar horse races that are run in September. There's lots of money out there. And a lot of these horses don't last that long. A lot of these good two-year-olds don't turn out to be necessarily great three-year-olds. Now, that's not to say that it's not worth it to run your horse as a two-year-old, but I think your expectations are different now. I think the expectation, if you have a really precocious, talented, fast two-year-old, I think the expectations are we're going to do as much as we can. If we get to the Derby, that's great. If we don't, we've got another horse here that can do this down the road. And I say that knowing that there were some really talented two-year-olds in the Bob Baffert barn going back to last November. We saw McKenzie. He was a very talented racehorse until he got hurt in February. Why? Well, maybe the two-year-old races hurt him. Last year's two-year-old champion. He got to the Derby, Good Magic, and then he got to the Derby, and Bolt Doro, he was the third place finisher in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. They both got to the Derby. Bolt Doro ran terrible in the Derby. Good Magic, I believe, was off the board in the Derby. He didn't run very, I'm sorry, he ran second in the Derby, and then came back and pressed Justify the Preakness, and then finished off the board. So I think the expectations are different. Is it a sign of things to come? Maybe, maybe not, but it should be, I think.
Let's talk about the legacy of what's going to be moving forward for this particular horse. Now, for those who are casual or lighthearted in the realm, they're going to talk about the competition. And if we're talking historically, Steve, there's competition that matches up to the guys like Secretariat. I mean, let's be honest. I feel that if it wasn't for Secretariat, Sham could be a Triple Crown winner, right? We can agree on that, right?
Absolutely. And if it wasn't for Affirmed, Alidar would be a Triple Crown champion.
Exactly. Alidar would have been a Triple Crown champion. With all that being said, what type of competition did Justify face, in your opinion, over these three races?
That's a fluid question. It still remains to be seen. But what we will see, what we saw with American Pharoah was that the competition behind American Pharoah, until this past weekend, the most recent Triple Crown winner, was that it was okay. It was good. It wasn't great. I think there are still going to be good stories to come out of this 2018 crop. I think Hofburg is going to be a nice horse. I think there's a lot of potential for horses, for Vino Rosso. I think there's a lot of potential for some of the Todd Pletcher runners that maybe didn't show up on Derby Day. That's a fluid question. We'll see as the year progresses. But to go back to the earlier question about, you know, the journey to get there, a lot of times I think what we find out about the three-year-olds is we find out a lot of those things later in the year. There's the Ohio Derby. There's the Indiana Derby. There's the Travers, the Haskell. There's the Breeders' Cup races. There's horses that turn back in distance. There's horses that go onto the turf and they run really well there. I think that still remains to be seen, but I think the idea, and this will go to a question I think we're going to get to in a moment, is the idea that the competition isn't good, so therefore the Triple Crown isn't that good, is illogical, because I don't think it would have mattered if these were really great horses or not. Nobody was going to beat Justify in that Belmont Stakes on Saturday.
No, I agree. And again, him going wire to wire, that can't be overlooked either, right?
It can't be overlooked because, especially, and again, this will lead to one of the talking points here in a moment. He breaks out of the gate like a quarter horse. He goes really quick, like a 23-3 opening quarter mile. And I remember watching the race with friends, going, "Oh God, please don't do that! Don't go that fast! Don't go that fast! Because it's gonna end badly." And then Mike Smith settles him down to a 48-second half mile, a 1:13.6 furlongs, a 1:38 mile, and that was perfect. But yeah, it can't be underscored. He didn't have a straw in his path in literally almost all three of these races. Remember, he sits just off the flank of a horse to his outside in the Derby. He duels with the lead basically every step of the way for the first mile of the Preakness before drawing off to win that and then holding off the late charges that came at him. And then wire to wire basically every step of the way in the Belmont. He was rarely headed in these races, which makes the achievement even more remarkable.
Again, we're being joined right now by Steve Bordstein. He's the host of First Sports in Farmington, New Mexico on Fox Sports 1340 AM and also the Fast Track. We'll talk about both of those shows in just a moment. As far as the talking points go out of the Triple Crown, this doesn't just relate to horse racing. I mean, it's ludicrous talk that we get all the time. The sport of boxing is full of malarkey like this that somehow, some way, picks up the national spotlight. It's the same in the NBA, Major League Baseball, doesn't matter what sport we're talking about. But the team of Vino Rosso actually thought that there was a lot more gamesmanship in the Belmont than what Bob Baffert is saying on what happened with Restoring Hope. Steve, I got to get your thoughts on this.
Okay, well, there was gamesmanship, and it's completely legal, and that's cool. And the talking point is that Restoring Hope is trained by Bob Baffert, owned by different people, owned by Gary and Mary West, and they are two longtime horsemen who have been in the business for years. Now, there's an angle to this that I want to kind of quickly go through. In the old days, and by the old days, I mean like 10 years ago, when a trainer had more than one horse in a race, they ran as what was called a coupled entry. You would see them in your programs listed as 1 and 1A. In an effort to increase betting, in an effort to increase more horses per race, they came up with laws around the country that regulated that a trainer could run more than one horse in a race and not have them as a coupled entry. So, whereas in years past you would have 1 and 1A, in some instances 1, 1A, and 1B, they uncoupled them. So that way they weren't just one wagering entity. Had Restoring Hope run under the old rules, Restoring Hope and Justify would have run as a coupled entry. And if you go on what you watched in the Belmont Stakes, an inquiry could have been called against Justify for the alleged interference, and we'll get to that in a second, that was done by Restoring Hope. And had the stewards determined that there was interference, they could have taken Justify down. And then, even though he had nothing to do with it, it was all Restoring Hope, but they could have taken that entry down and disqualified Justify for the efforts of his entry mate, and thus you would have had another horse win the Belmont Stakes and thus another Triple Crown winner. So the idea that it's gamesmanship, yes, it was. But here's where it turns into an illogical argument. If you believe that Restoring Hope was only entered into the race to cause a distraction, to impede with the likes of Vito Rosso, to impede with the likes of Hofburg, here's the problem with that. Post positions were drawn on Tuesday, 4 days before the running of the Belmont Stakes. If you were under the impression that Restoring Hope was only in there to cause interference or to cause a distraction, you as a trainer, Todd Pletcher, you as a trainer, Steve Asmussen, you as a trainer, Wayne Lucas, and as jockeys, Jose Ortiz, Irad Ortiz, you as a jockey know this 4 days in advance, and you can figure out a plan to thwart that effort of gamesmanship on the part of Restoring Hope.
It would have been I think that would have been a black eye for the sport of horse racing, really. When you have a Triple Crown winner, but you don't, it's an asterisk that that's never going to go away. We'd be talking about that forever. And in, you know, listening to you break it down, Steve, it's preposterous. It's malarkey. It's ridiculous.
The whole thing is preposterous. And the reality of it is, and this is where I understand I always use this term on my show. There's an impropriety, and then there's the appearance of an impropriety. And that's what you have here. You have the appearance of one until you start to break it down piece by piece here. The reality of the situation is this. Justify didn't need Restoring Hope out there. He didn't. We've seen this situation in similar instances. We saw it in 2004 when Smarty Jones was going for the Triple Crown. And they did run it, and they did run a rabbit there. Now, in 2004, it wasn't just one, it wasn't a multiple trainer thing. It wasn't a trainer with multiple horses. It was just three horses got into the race, and two of them were absolutely put in the race to put pressure on Smarty Jones. It's not unprecedented. We've seen it in years past in races not as prestigious as the Belmont Stakes with the Triple Crown on the line. Turf racing, a lot of long-distance turf racing, you will see a trainer enter multiple horses in a race. One horse is absolutely designed to be the rabbit, they call him. The rabbit goes out, sets impossibly fast fractions, absolutely levels the competition early on to set it up for his slower but longer distance running horse who will come from off the pace but needs a fast pace in order to set things up. It's what we call the boomerang effect. It's not uncommon. It's not against the rules. The rules are written in such a way that makes it that it's very common, but you get the novice racing fan or you get the racing pessimist who wants to point fingers at everything, and they say, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible, this is terrible. No, you're not familiar with how the sport works. You're not familiar with how it operates. This is completely within the rules, and it's completely acceptable. And again, Justify didn't need Restoring Hope out there. He didn't, in all honesty. He would have won this race anyway. Why? Because he was so much better than the rest of the horses that were out there on the track.
Last question before I let you go, Steve. We always have to talk legacy when we're talking NBA. I hate that kind of talk, but I'm going to put you on the spot. Where does Justify rank all time in your opinion?
As far as Triple Crown winners, I said earlier, he's one of the five or six greatest.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's done. He'll have two or three more races before his racing career will come to an end. He will probably race two more times this summer, and then he'll probably, if everything goes to plan, he'll probably have another race in the Breeders' Cup Classic, much like American Pharoah did back in 2015. The story of Justify will be determined if he goes through the rest of his campaign undefeated. When Seattle Slew won the Triple Crown in 1978, he lost his next race. If Justify finishes his campaign undefeated, he goes among the elites of all-time greatest racehorses that have ever walked on a track.
Steve, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
First Sports, weekday mornings, 7 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time. That's 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. You can listen to it live through the iHeartRadio app. Just download the app to your smartphone or wireless device. You can also hear the show through the app by going to our website at foxsports1340.com. We do a combination of local, regional, national sports 5 days a week. Also, like you mentioned earlier, host of the Fast Track, nationally syndicated horse racing show with best bets from all over the country and around the world. That airs 8 a.m. Mountain Time. 10 a.m. Eastern, and you can also hear it through that same website on the iHeartRadio app. You can also follow me on Twitter at Fox1340AM.
Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you so much for the time, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Anytime, my friend. Looking forward to it.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Listen, you must... Say it again. Buscarini. All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens Bridge right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav. Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750, Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Fun show, mixing it up both local and national. As always, a pleasure to get Steve Bordstein on and to talk to Coach Troy Winter one more time about the Emory High School soccer squad. Congratulations to those boys and congratulations to the Carbon High School soccer team as well. Tomorrow's show, we're going to be back at it live right here in the studio. We are going to talk to Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. He will join us, and we got to get some boxing talk in tomorrow as well. Should happen. We should get Canelo and Triple G, at least I'm hoping. If not, there's plenty of other excellent boxing matchups to talk about, like maybe Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua, and of course Terrence Crawford continuing to impress as he wrecked Jeremy Horn this last week to claim the welterweight championship. We'll talk about that as well. So we'll mix it up tomorrow between the local and national sports front again. That'll do it for this Wednesday edition of the show. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.